Oui, Médis.
Pick a Disc is the podcast that you're listening to. The person speaking is Matt Latham. Hi there. This is the podcast where people pick a disc and talk about them for whatever reason they so desire. And for this fortnight, the 21st episode, which is makes it legal to drink in some states of America, I speak to George Gadd, singer-songwriter from around the Nottingham area, who was technically the first person to be recorded at Piccadisc HQ, which is my new house, even though Colin did previous episode, but that was recorded a few days after this one. Internal chronology gets confusing sometimes, and I can't remember if I actually play upon the fact previous episode or not. Even though at the time of recording it was only released a few days ago. But I'm rabbiting on, don't worry about me. I'll get to the point. So, the next 10 episodes is here, and George and I talk about God Damn It by Alkaline Trio. And one of his, if not his, favourite album of all time, and for other reasons that we'll speak, delve into. It's a great episode. There are some revelations he reveals about himself in terms of his fandom, which is at a level that we haven't actually touched upon so far on the podcast, and it was a delight to talk about. So before we talk to George, the bit we always say, share and share alike, you know, support the podcast in any way you want to do, and if you really want to, you can lie and say we're good on iTunes. Don't forget to lie about us, don't worry. Say we're good. 5 stars. So, with all that, let's speak to George. The first time I think I met you, I think it was like about 7 years ago, about 2012, because I've not had the chance to bring this up in the podcast yet, but I used to help out a friend of mine with acoustic videos on YouTube called the Addystock Sessions. He was based in Liverpool. I did the Birmingham route, or the Birmingham League. Well,
contingent.
Yes, yeah. Contingent, that's a better word for it. And I filmed a couple, and we set up an email thing, and then like the first email we ever had was someone saying, you should get George Gadd.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh. And for some reason I thought it was me who contacted you, but that's quite weird.
No, because like I think I contacted you either via, it was either through email or through your Facebook page. I can't remember saying, nice. I'm not a weirdo, but someone's suggested you for this acoustic session that we do.
Oh, so, that's a great start to this podcast. Yeah.
And so basically we met up and we ended up doing a session in the park behind the library in...
It wasn't the library then, though.
No.
It was a building site.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the building that would be the library.
Yeah.
And I think you did the cover of the Felice Brothers.
Felice Brothers.
Yeah, and the song you did was...
The Day That We Died?
Yeah.
Which I don't play anymore.
Yeah. Sorry, I still have that in like back of my head sometimes.
Oh.
Yeah.
I play it for one guy. I played it for his wedding recently. Because he was like, when I get married, you're going to play that song. And I was like, okay. And like 3 years down the line, yeah. Played that song. It's like, never again.
A guy always repays his debts.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but to this day, I have no idea who it was. I think I've lost the original email. And, well, actually, I've forgotten the logins to get into the Addystock. But I can't, to this day, I still can't figure out or remember who suggested you.
I don't know who I can give a tenner now.
Yeah. It's one of those ongoing mysteries, like, who was it that made us cross paths all those years ago?
Who built Stonehenge?
Yes. But, and also, this is going to be a weird one because we're going to have two kind of icebreaker bits, because this is technically the first, in air quotes, because episode where I've recorded in my house. So,
it's a lovely abode for anyone listening at home.
Yeah, thank you very much. So, Piccadisc.
Mood lighting.
Yeah. Piccadisc HQ, or basically my living room. He's now our host and George is in front of me instead of Skype, which is a nice change. The reason that we're here is because we're going to talk about an album that you want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And when you tell the lovely people at home the album we're going to be talking about tonight?
God damn it.
I'm so sorry. No.
It's Alkaline Trio's debut record, God Damn It. Came out in 1999.
98.
Oh, fuck. Sorry. Am I allowed to swear?
You're buying it.
Good.
The only reason I know it's 98 is, well,
you looked it up.
I looked it up. Yeah. And also the date of it's released on the 13th of October, which is my birthday. So, yeah. So it was my, I was 13 when this came out.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So, yeah. And I think if my timing's right, this will be released a few days after its 21st birthday. Mm. Yeah, yeah. So what have you picked? God damn it.
So when we initially were chatting about this, there are a lot of albums that I was considering, and the one at the top was probably Crimson by Alkaline Trio, and I think I gave you a false start by suggesting that. But I think this record was like a gateway record for me, and it was like the first album that I heard that I was like, wow, this is like raw. This is completely human. Like, you can kind of hear everything. You can feel everything as well, whereas Crimson's kind of got like a nice little sheen polish. But I think without this record, I wouldn't have got into bands like, I don't know, like Jawbreaker are like a huge band for me, and just like punk music in general, like DIY music as well.
So was it kind of like an entry into a genre for you then?
Yeah, yeah.
So was that the first punk?
Well, I'd say the gateway record for me was Blink-182 by Blink-182.
Yeah. Not making me feel old. What's
yeah. And then, like, through there, like, I got really into, like, LimeWire and just downloading and trying to find, like, new stuff. So I downloaded all of Blink-182's discography. And I kind of had this thing for collecting MP3s, but not just collecting them, but collecting them in, like, really high bit rates as well.
was this in the days of modems, or was this, like...
This was after dial-up. This was broadband. Sorry. But I remember I probably went through about like 3 or 4 computers, because there's just so much viruses on like peer-to-peer sharing software. Then I got into torrents, which was a lot easier, just bulk download everything. But I think Alkaline Trio, like, it was just a gateway for me to get into that kind of music.
So... how did you find Alkaline Trio? Was God Damn It the first album you listened to?
No, the first album I listened to was Crimson, and Time to Waste had just come out, and I saw the music video on Kerrang, and I remember watching it, and I was like, this is, to me, this reminded me of Rammstein for some reason. I don't know why. But immediately I was like really hyped up for that album. It wasn't out yet. I remember the day it came out, like, I bought it. Then they released the deluxe edition like a year later, so I bought that as well. And it was just, it is a mind-blowing record. I'd probably put Crimson and God Damn It are kind of interchangeable between the best one for me. But I think at the minute, God Damn It takes the top spot.
So you pretty much kind of like flip between the two of them?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Side note is, my history of Alkaline Trio is, I think, I know a lot of friends, a few friends of mine back when we was at school, the ones that were, lack of a better term, the Grebo scene.
The Grebos.
Yeah. So I was kind of, in the lead up to this, I was thinking about it, and I'm like, I've not thought of that word for at least 10 years, because what a strange word. I don't even know that kind of mini scene exists anymore.
Someone at work used it, an NHS healthcare professional used it, and I was like, you can't say Grebo. Like, but, 40.
Yeah. But then again, now they might have been around, may have known some at the time, so. Mm. But, yeah, the... But then I think... And I remember, I think... Stupid Kid was played quite a lot on stuff like Kerrang and...
That was the big Q single, stuff.
That was the big single. And I never really gave it much... times to listen to. I think there was a good chunk of time where I got quite, and I think this is the first time I'm going to admit this on the podcast, where I pretty much religiously listened to Chris Miles on Radio 1.
Yeah.
And
so I anticipated.
Yeah. But pretty much, I used to listen, actually, now, this is quite a lot of Radio 1 at the time, because there used to be like a kind of particularly when I was in sixth form and like didn't have to go to school all the time, it was like Radio 1 used to be played in the common room as well. Mm. So you'd have like Joe Wiley, but then you'd have like Mark and Lard, and then Chris Moore's in the afternoon, and then he moved to like Breakfast, and I think it was like Colin and Edith, and like the playlist was, it was pretty much like the same 10 songs over and over again.
It still is, yeah. Yeah,
but one of them was Time to Waste by Alkaline Trio.
It's mega.
I'm probably completely misremembering that, but I'm pretty sure that Time to Waste used to get played a lot on Radio 1, because I know the Black Parade did as well, which I always thought was kind of weird, that like a radio edit of My Chemical Romance on Radio 1 of all places. But I really like Time to Waste, and using the internet in a similar way that you said, I managed to obtain Crimson and listen to that a few times. I think I only listened to it a few times, but and then kind of like dipped out of it, and only really kept Time to Waste, because I still think that's a brilliant track. It's a great, great song. And then I think later on I kind of rediscovered the existence of Private Eye for some reason. I can't remember how. I can't remember how I discovered it. I think there was a band that I liked that covered it, and I found the original, and I just really liked the original. So it was only kind of those two songs that I kind of like listened to quite a lot. So like, so I'll have like a playlist of like random songs of bands that I probably don't know, like the discography of, but like the odd track of, and those two from Alkaline Trio kind of sips in. But other than that, I've not really listened to much of the albums. I think I might have listened to I think I might have listened to that once, because of I think it might have been covered on the If You're Listening podcast. But yeah, so I think pretty much that's the only time I think I listened to From Here to Infirmary anyway. So yeah, so, and I didn't even realise they, because I thought To Here from Infirmary was their debut.
Yeah,
when it turns out it's their third, I think, isn't it?
That was kind of their breakout. Yeah.
What jumped out at you when you listened to it? What songs? It's just like
an immediate record. And the thing is, when I was downloading all of these songs on LimeWire, they were just a collection of songs. It wasn't like collated into albums. So the obvious ones that stuck out to me were like, I don't know, like Nose Over Tail and Clavicle. And to me, those are like the fan favorites. I think they still play them live, like they're staples in their set. I think they had like an acoustic record a couple of years ago. It was like a greatest hits compilation, but they redid all of their songs acoustically. And I think both of those songs were on there as well.
So yeah, because I was listening through, I mean, just talking about Clavicle, I was listening to it, and I'm like, and I wasn't exactly sure what a clavicle was. So I was listening to it, and I was like, is this going to be one of those things where he mentions that the band kind of forgets it exists? Like, particularly with some of the genres, well, you get some bands that kind of like look back and go, yeah, we were stupid.
Cancelled. Yeah.
Yeah. We were stupid, and like kind of like disown some of the songs and says, we were stupid, we were kids back then. But, no, it's the Collarbone, isn't it?
Yeah.
But in my research, and basically the Genius annotation was on about that, I think Audrey Hepburn, like, had famous, collarbones. But she used to wear kind of up to, like, neck. Oh, I can't remember what the terminology is.
Like, really tight stuff around her neck.
Yeah,
to accentuate her clavicle.
Oh, no, or just to basically hide it so that people wouldn't get distracted by him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
Weird, okay.
Yeah, but... so, like... But
imagine, like, going up to someone, like, you've got a lovely clavicle. What?
Yeah. But yeah, I was kind of scared to Google it, so
yeah.
I was kind of scared to Google it, but I mean, it's not exactly an innocent song. It's like, it's, but it's what, like,
I think it's quite poetic.
Yeah, I mean, it could be much worse.
It could be much worse.
Yeah, I mean, particularly I think the first line of the chorus is, "I want to wake up naked next year," and I was like,
"I want to wake up naked next to you, kissing the curve of your clavicle."
Yeah. I mean, like, for someone like me who didn't know clavicle meant, I was like,
yeah. The curve.
The poetic, you mentioned the word poetic, and I might bring this up now. I've heard people who, and I kind of like laughed off people who can't tell the difference between Mark Hoppus and Tom DeLonge.
Yeah.
During Blink White 2, and I've listened to a couple of podcasts from people who say like the struggle, and I'm like, how on earth can you kind of like not mix?
They're like different frequencies.
At some point, I'm pretty sure that Alkaline Trio has some kind of shared vocals in places. And is it Dan Adriano?
Yeah.
Kind of does lead vocals. And I can't tell which one.
You can't tell which one's
no,
which?
I suddenly have a lot more sympathy for people who can't. But the only one I'm pretty sure of is Enjoy Your Day.
Yeah, yeah. And Message from Kathleen, which is like one of the... I think that's one of my favourite songs on the record.
Oh, okay.
But I think he only has two on this album. But yeah, I I find with him, he's got more of like an Elvis Costello kind of aged vibe, whereas Matt Skiba's like, well, now it's poppy, but back in the day it was a bit more goth.
Yeah, but when you say poetic, there's... He's slightly more poetic and less like visceral and kind of metaphors.
Mm.
So he's kind of more general, kind of like your... I don't want to say generic singer-songwriter, because it's just... Whereas Matt Skiba, I think, he's got more... He's pretty much lead writer for the majority of the album.
Yeah.
He's got a very unique kind of way of creating metaphors that kind of hit you in like a gut punch type thing.
Mm.
And like you can kind of tell there's none in that one. And I think it's pretty much less verbose as well. There's the verses and the choruses are pretty much shorter and there's a lot less variety in the lyrics.
I find with Matt Skiba, a lot of his lyrics are like tongue-in-cheek, often quite morbid.
Yeah.
But with Dan, like, I feel like he's only really come into his own in more recent stuff. So on like My Shame Is True and This Addiction, he had like a few songs on those albums, but to me those were the better songs.
Mm-hmm.
I think on My Shame Is True he only had like three songs and I was like, these are the best three songs on the album.
Well, I think as you guys came in, I just discovered this like documentary. I can't remember how old it was, but
it came out with the goddammit 10th anniversary in 2008.
So you recognised the documentary?
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've watched it maybe like twice because I bought the 10th anniversary thing when it came out.
Yeah,
and I bought it again on record as well. Bit of a super fan. Bit weird.
But as I was, because I pretty much only found out it existed about an hour before you turned up.
Mm.
So I just started, I'll start watching it. And I think at this point, I think he'd only been in the band by what, a year and a bit.
Mm.
So I'm guessing that his like vocal stuff he only contributed a couple of songs, whereas they probably had a back end four of them, I think.
Well, I think the initial idea was he was going to contribute because he was in two bands. He was in a ska band called Slapstick, but he was in an emo band called Tuesday, who were doing quite well. So he kind of brought in more of the emo side of things. There's a cool little tidbit of information. When they actually went to record this, Dan did all the backing vocals first, which is really weird. And there's kind of like this weird, like disjointed thing about all the songs. Like they work, but like when you know that and you listen back, you're like, what? Like, that works really well.
Yeah, because I think from what I gathered, I'm assuming the backing vocals are usually done after the lead vocals are done because they know how to harmonise and stuff. Yeah. So, and I only saw that tidbit just about like half an hour ago, and it's an interesting mix, and it kind of explains kind of like the weird, like it's not weird, but particularly when you can hear both of them sing at the same time.
Yeah,
being grown up on a diet of Blink-182. Where like it is pretty much 50-50 tag team vocals at times, or whoever turns up in the studio on that day. They're very much mixed together and the backing vocals kind of work. Whereas this one, there is that kind of like weird detachment in that you can kind of feel like they're in different rooms where
there's a lot of timing issues. I mean, I wouldn't call them issues because I think that characteristic makes the album.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a song called Trouble Breathing, and it's like they're kind of like back and forth thing, and it's like he didn't even have like Matt Skiba's lead vocal to do the backing tracks off, and it's like that's really cool.
Actually, speaking of Trouble Breathing, that's one of the ones I actually really quite like.
Mm.
And it's because it touches on a few things on depression and suicidal thoughts, and it does it in kind of both a way that's both almost tongue in cheek but also quite poignant at the same time. And when I was on about earlier about how he's got like a very good grasp of metaphors to like promote an image, like for example the second verse is where it says, "You told me that the daylight burned you and that the sunrise was enough to kill you. I said maybe you're a vampire. You said it's quite possible. I feel truly dead inside."
It's almost on its own, like he's set up a joke and then that's the punchline.
But I mean, when I was focusing on that one, it's kind of like the idea that if you've got two people, someone who suffers from depression and someone who wants to be supportive but doesn't really know how, and kind of tries to use humour to try and, because I think the default to try and cheer someone up is to try and use humour.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of like that one. But then if you go back and look at the first half of the song, then the narrator says that and says that, oh, I suffer from it too. So there's, but there's, and I can't remember what you, and, but, and there's a line saying, you called me lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like someone who says, oh, I suffered through it.
And
we're still
got
here.
Out of it.
Yeah. And but then it says like, but then that, like, you called me lucky, because like, and then that kind of brings back the more serious nature of it, where it's like, you call me lucky because you're still through it and you don't know if you are. Because the song then talks about, like, I think the chorus is about choosing between a rope and a bottle, and like quite dark and
incredibly dark.
Yeah.
And like the first lyric is, you told me that you want to die. I said I've been there myself more than a few times, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah, and I'm like,
you're right.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like that, and I'm like, it's actually really, really good.
It's visceral.
Good, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the difference between, perhaps if you go back to like the 8 songs by Dan Argiano, there's a bit of a lacking in that kind of immediate punch. Mm. So like, I think Skiba's got this kind of ability to hit you with, particularly with a good few first lines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the song I really like, Private Eye, the first songs of that is, I've been drifting this lake.
Drag this lake, looking for corpses. Yeah.
Yeah. It's he's got a very good way of hooking you in and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah. So, any other songs on here that you want to talk about that are highlights? Or?
I mean, I could probably say anything about all of them. I quite like Message from Kathleen. I think that's one of my, I think it's a recent favorite more so, because I used to be quite a Skiba fanboy and just skip out the Dan stuff. But then going back to it, I'm like, oh, this guy's actually like incredible. So Message from Kathleen's really good. Sorry About That's really good. The last song on the album. San Francisco is incredible. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, see, San Francisco, I mean, there are points of it. When I was listening to it earlier, whilst ironing of all things. Yeah.
Punk rock.
Yeah. Listening to punk while ironing. it makes it better. The ironing, not the there are parts of it that kind of remind me a bit of like early Offspring in places.
Yeah,
because
like Smash.
Yeah, yeah, Smash. Yeah, I got Smash era Offspring.
Yeah,
yeah, where it kind of like it goes into a bit where like it kind of ups the distortion and deliberate tunelessness comes in, and like, but then it gets emotion there, and I was like, oh, okay. And then whilst then, and it kind of offsets where you've got, so it was like 98. So this would have been after Dookie as well. So you got some stuff where you can kind of feel the DNA of Offspring style punk, and then you got the more pop punk.
Yeah.
Of like Dookie and Green Day, and there's almost the kind of chugga 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 of a Blink, sounds where
it's a premonition.
Yeah, and like I think as I was listening to it, I was trying to figure out, I couldn't detect whether, because some bands, particularly pop punk bands, you can kind of, even if you weren't aware of the band or if you've not heard them before, you'd be able to tell what band it is. I mean, you'd be pre Tom DeLonge leaving, you could be able to tell a Blink 182 song because they've got a distinct style, and but not only just the bass or the guitar as well, but I think Travis Barker, somehow you can tell
his drumming.
Yeah, yes. You can tell him being a drummer.
Yeah,
you can tell when he's drumming.
Yeah,
from anyone else. And it took me a while to try and figure out what, like, if Alkaline Trio have one, and they kind of do. There's kind of like very short bursts of repeated riffs that go through it. So like, yeah, da na 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 da na na.
Kind of, yeah. What is that one? I want to say that's Nose Over Tail.
I think it might be in Take Plenty to Be Alcohol, I think.
It's the intro to Take. Yeah.
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 But that kind of like start, but that kind of like style kind of has that kind of, and it has that kind of style of, that goes through, and it does feel like unique to him. And I started to gauge that when I was listening to this, that they have got kind of their own signature Alkaline Trio sounds that I may start picking up on. Because I was like, I can remember typing that going, they're kind of lacking that bit. But then as I was listening to this again, because I did give a few tracks from Here to Infirmary and Crimson a quick listen to again, just to see if I could hear that. And there are kind of that DNA to it.
See, the interesting thing about those three records is they've got a different drummer for each of them. And the drummer they've got now, I think, has been with them since Good Morning. And I think he's got like a signature kind of sound. And he's also a songwriter. He's written, well, I think he's done like his own solo stuff, but he wrote a song, a B-side called Don't Say You Won't. And it's like this really cool pop. It's like a pop song, basically. And it's like, what? Like, if Blink-182 had that on a new record, it'd be incredible.
Yeah. One of the things that I keep meaning to bring up in these episodes and I always forget to, is talking about the bloody artwork. Because unless you're Kurt North, the artwork keeps getting missed. But this has a crossover with Cringe as well, because there seems to be quite a bit online that he used to work as a bike messenger at the time. Yeah. And that, like, he used to get woken up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and like the first words he used to say was "God damn it," and basically the artwork is just like three red clocks, which I think the friend of
Heather,
merch.
I can't remember her surname. It used to be Heather Gable.
I did say her name a bit.
Yeah,
an hour ago, and I can't remember what it was, unfortunately. But I think it was a friend of hers who had like grandmother's red alarm clock, which was set to 6 o'clock, repeated several times.
So it just says 666.
Yeah, and apparently Max Geber's got quite an interesting Satanism or something. Or
I think they're members of the Church of Satan, and I want to say that Southern Rock on this album is about the Church of Satan, but I'm not too sure. Anton Levy or something.
Okay.
In fact, an original name for Crimson was Church and Destroy, which I think is a much better name.
True, although Crimson does have the blood,
it's a nice shade of red, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Church and Destroy, it sounds like an awesome like metal band. Like,
I think it might be too metal for a punk album.
Yeah, true.
So it sounds like, I don't know.
Isn't it a Stooges reference? Search and Destroy. Was that by them?
I'm not sure.
Searching to Destroy, that one.
I'm not sure. But particularly with the artwork, the backgrounds, and then pretty much cringing about singing about the fact that it's about him having to go to work and do something he probably doesn't really like, it does help give it a kind of thematic feel. And whilst I've not been able to pick up anything else from any other song, going back to San Francisco, I think San Francisco kind of has that idea of having to go back to Chicago and do that job again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's almost like a kind of rose-tinted spectacles with San Francisco. It's like, oh, this place, it's fantastic. I don't want to go back to Chicago, you know. He's like stomach burning. That was one of the things. And it's like, yeah.
Mm. But yeah, but I've not been able to find any other kind of
link between them. With Alkaline Trio, there's a lot of, he chats a lot about drinking. Is probably a main thing, especially on this record.
Matt Skiba's got like a history with alcohol and drugs as well.
Probably drugs, yeah.
Because I think I think My Little Needle is that the heroin song.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. Probably, I'd assume so.
So when I first heard it, I thought it was more about like the needle in the haystack, which is about it in general. But then the link between, I think it does reference. Kind of off the top of my head, but there is like a reference to kind of like taking heroin in the song as well.
Yeah.
But I've forgotten to put the lyric, to copy and paste the lyric into my notes about it. But because I think one of the lines mentions the idea of a stash.
Mm.
I'm going to credit the commenter ZNK on Genius for this. Said he likens the stash as a stash of heroin, because whereas the song kind of means like a stash of basically hay.
Yeah,
the needle in the haystack.
Well, I see. Yeah,
but
like a bale of hay.
Yeah, but what I quite like as well is that if it is more about kind of like the use of drugs in it, like the stash, perhaps when the stash is gone, I think is the lyric, is that like the removal of friends and family and support.
Mm.
So once that's gone, you've got nothing but
isn't that one the one with the bridge where it's like, don't forget to let your life rot you inside out as well?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense that could be about like addiction or drugs or something along those lines.
But I think, I'm assuming that with the song Take Plenty with Alcohol.
Yeah.
In from the later album, that's kind of a theme that.
Yeah. So. And even, I want to say even the last album, Is This Thing Cursed? Like there's probably a few references on the actual title track. I can't think of any off the top of my head, though, I'm afraid. But I do know that he, well, I don't know this personally, but he kind of sobered up for Blink 182 a bit and kind of, you know, mellowed down because this is more of a professional gig for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is where the millions come in.
Yeah. Yeah. So making money in Blink 182.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I've not really delved into much of the Blink 182 output.
Mm.
So how much is that different from? Because I mean, I'm a massive, massive fan of Blink 182, but I kind of not really listen to anything post the self-titled, which one day will be a pick by me, but if no one else picks it first. But beyond, because then they released that pile of tosh called Neighbourhoods, and which was like kind of bad.
Yeah, they recorded that like in different states as well.
Yeah,
which like completely remote from each other, which I just find really weird.
Yeah, but then I think then Tom went off to look for aliens.
Storm Area 51.
Yeah. Well, we went off to look for aliens and might actually get credited for finding something.
Yeah.
If that's the case, I retract everything I might have just made jokes about. But then Matt Skiba joined, and I've not listened to much of California, but I really liked Bored to Death.
Mm.
And I've not listened to the new album that came out as of recording yesterday. On the day of recording, it was yesterday. But you have.
Mm-hmm.
So... Without making it into a Blink 182 podcast, in terms of Skiba, how much has he had an impact on Blink 182, and how much has it changed him as a songwriter? Or?
So I think because I listened to God Damn It and the new Blink 182 album on the way here, So it was cool to kind of see that complete contrast. And the thing is, with Blink 182, with the new record, his vocals are a lot more processed. You can kind of tell that he doesn't put as much effort into the lyrics, but what he lacks in lyrics, he makes up for in melody. And with this album, he proper belts it, and it's like, whoa, you're right. Like, how are you going to do this live? Like, there's one song, No Heart to Speak Of, and like the chorus comes crashing in, and it's like, oh my God, like what? I think he's kind of coming into his own a bit, and I think it's the best record they've done since the self-titled. And I think they're just kind of getting used to each other and, you know, them and their, you know, multi-million dollar songwriters as well that they work with.
Has he had an impact on the sound of Blink 182, or is it more of a case that he's kind of mixed in with the Blink 182 sound? Because technically it is, it's not a new group that he's formed with Mark Hoppus and Travis Barker, else it would just be something like Plus 44 or
Boxcar Racer. I was going to say it's kind of like Plus 44, but with another singer as well to kind of take the reins and like with a hook or a chorus.
Yeah.
But they also try and write pop music. So there's Blame It On My Youth, which is like a proper pop song. Dark Side as well. Oh my goodness, that chorus is like what?
I think cause before recording, was briefly mentioning it, and I haven't really had any inkling to listen to it. I mean, I've got it saved to listen to someday, but I don't know. I might have to give it a listen later on or tomorrow, just to see if it is any good.
I mean, I think the cool thing is like Skiba kind of keeps his punk roots. So with the last Alkaline Trio record, like it was completely. You know, they didn't have like songwriters or anything like he'd had with Blink 182. And it was just the straight up, like he was kind of, it was more his project. Like the first single was about like a Russian spy plane. And it's like, you wouldn't get that on the radio for Blink 182.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just a lot of the songs, like I think they were more political as well on the Is This Thing Cursed record, which was quite cool.
He's not very political on this, on God Damn It, though, is he?
On God Damn It?
Yeah.
No, not at all. I think it's... He kind of touches on politics sometimes, but it's rare. It's really rare. The only one I can think of at the minute is I Found A Way on Agony and Irony, or The American Scream on This Addiction. Yeah, it's The American Scream, sorry, where, like, it's about, like, an Afghanistan veteran who, like, came back from war, went to his mother's grave and like shot himself. And it's basically Skiba just saying, this is fucked up that this happens.
Has he done Alkaline Trio stuff since joining?
They've only had one record, but I don't think they toured extensively. Like they definitely didn't come to the UK, cause I would have seen them. But yeah, it kind of seems like Blink 182 is like his main thing at the moment. And maybe after this record they've done, maybe he'll just take a bit more time and do that Alkaline Trio record that we all want.
Yeah. So if we just talk briefly about Dan Adriano, because he's got his own kind of solo stuff as well. So like, yeah. So he's not left out in the lurch while.
I don't know, because he's done two solo records. The first one was received really well. The second one was produced by Jeff Rosenstock, and it was really good, but it kind of felt like it didn't have that that publicity that the first one had. But I thought that both of them were really good, to be fair.
Okay. So, but have you listened to them as much as anything Matsky was involved in? Or?
Probably not, let's be honest. No. No, I don't think I have.
No. To be fair, I mean, if again, lightning back to the Blink 182 analogy, Boxcar Racer, I quite. Songs from Boxcar Racer are quite light. I mean, I Feel So is a great song, but the only other one I remember listening to a lot was Elevator. But that was because Mark Hoppus was.
It was a Blink 182 song.
Yeah, because it was a Blink 182 song. Yeah. But a bit. But basically, I think it's the precursor because it was quite a dark one.
You can see
one.
The foundations.
It's of the self-titled.
Yeah, of the self-titled. Yeah.
And Angels and Airways, I just cannot get into Angels and Airways.
The
whatsoever.
First record. But I mean, like Cat Like Thief, I couldn't really get into.
Yeah.
Because I don't like Tim Armstrong. I don't really like the Transplants. I love Rancid.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Plus 44. I did quite like.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling I might have naturally sided with the Mark. Hopper yeah. side of things, if I'm completely honest.
It's a shame they didn't do a second record as well.
Yeah, because that was like kind of 80s tinge and the pop punk stuff. I want to briefly touch on the reception, because I couldn't find much about how it was received, but I know it apparently sold about 94,000 copies in the US.
Wow.
Yeah. But I'm not 100% sure how it's received in terms of the fan base. Is it looked on fondly? Was it?
I think this record, I can't speak for the entire Alkaline Trio fan base.
Please do.
Please do. I think it's either this record or From Here to Infirmary that are people's favourites for me. I've got Crimson as a sometimes anomaly. In terms of the actual reception, I think it was kind of, it broke through that ceiling. So after they released this, I think they toured with Jets to Brazil, who was like Jawbreakers, Blake from Jawbreakers, like new band, and they were like a bit more emo. I almost wanted to come on and talk about Orange Rhyming Dictionary, because that is an incredible record.
Is that Jawbreaker?
Jets to Brazil. But Jawbreaker, listen to Diary, Dear You. I always get Diary by Sunny Real Estate and Dear You mixed up because I listen to them at the same time. But Jets to Brazil, Chinatown. I Type for Miles, Sweet Avenue, like some of the greatest songs of all time. But sorry, tangency. But I think within the DIY punk community, like it did really well. And the second album as well, Maybe I'll Catch Fire. And then they signed to Vagrant Records and they kind of had that push with Stupid Kid. Probably got them like loads more fans as well.
There was an article on Consequence of Sound in 2013. I think it was talking about this album.
Yeah.
And
I've not read it.
Yeah. I think Randall Coburn is the writer.
Oh.
And I quote, "Hyperbole is, as it is for most young people, Skeeb's preferred mode of expression. There's a finality to his lyrics, as if he wrote them in a bathtub surrounded by plugged-in toasters. They're also cunning in how they encapsulate the despair, ludicrousy, and resignation of youthful angst, right down to the singer's tantrum-like delivery."
I like the reference to toasters and baths, because that touches on, arguably one of their hits, Radio, and the chorus is like, again, it starts out with shaking like a dog shitting razor blades. That just reels you in, doesn't it?
Again, as I said...
He's got a knack for first lines. But the chorus is, "I wish you would take my radio to bathe with you, plugged in and ready to fall." And it's like, wow, you're right, man. I don't know. Like, yeah, I'd probably say that... there's this kind of famous quote, but I don't know who said it, but like, you have your entire life to write your debut album and people write their debut album as if no one's listening. Mm-hmm. And that's probably exceptional in the case of Frightened Rabbit. Like, what's the album? Midnight Organ Fight. It's like one of my favorite albums. I've just brain fart. But he wrote that from a place of like a really dark place. But he thought no one was listening. And then, like, I think he touched on this when he was like promoting the fifth record, saying like, it's difficult to write from that place because you get self-conscious about, like, you know, what are people going to think? What are my family going to think? What are my friends going to think? And I think that's the case with like all debut records, or just like before the breakthrough records, I guess.
Okay. There's a quote from here from Pitchfork Media, and it's about, it was on about From Here to Infirmary, but it covers Alkaline Trio as a general. And I think you'll disagree with this one, to be honest. But
I'm liking this research.
Yeah.
It's very well researched.
Yeah. But
I feel like I'm doing an academic viva right now. But I'm defending my dissertation, my thesis, sorry.
This is a statement that you might defend.
Yeah.
Or might go against anyway. So I'm not sure who the writer was, but it's Pitchfork. So there's quite a bit that Alkaline Trio's music is not. It's not challenging, ambitious, or visionary. It is not clever, or self-aware. It's not even terribly skillful. But what it is tasty. Pure musical junk food, fast, greasy, and crafted for a general palate.
I mean, I sort of agree. They don't do anything technical. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of their songs are just four chord pop punk songs.
Yeah.
And I think especially with, like, God Damn It is... I went through it and I was like learning a lot of it on guitar. A lot of it's in the key of E.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not a very adventurous record. It's kind of confined. And, you know, later they kind of, you know, experiment a bit more. But I do half agree with
it. As we're gearing up towards the end of the podcast, we go into the closing bits. Have you ever seen Alkaline Trio live?
I saw them once on the Agony and Irony tour. Rock City, and I don't remember it because I was maybe like 16. Quite funny, actually. For Christmas one year, my dad bought me a subscription to the Alkaline Trio fan club. Bit sad. It was called the Blood Pact. Oh, hold on, I've got more. I've just remembered everything.
Lean back, get comfy.
Yeah, it's all come back. So we had like an online discussion forum where like I was chatting with people who liked Alkaline Trio. Which led me to create my own Alkaline Trio website called All Hope Deleted. And I think that's a lyric from Prevent This Tragedy. Because I used to be a member of a discussion forum called Punk Disasters, which was really cool. It was like a Blink-182 message forum. And I was getting into HTML and PHP, which is pretty much my job now. And the other day on Reddit, like, I was posting about stuff, not the other day, the other month, and someone recognized me from like 10 years ago, like making this message board. And I was like, that is the coolest thing that's ever happened to me in my life. I forgot that bit of hot goss. Completely forgot.
Sorry, as you were talking about that, I decided to try and Google All Hope Deleted.
Oh, yeah.
Alkaline Trio.
You can't find it because obviously I don't pay for the domain anymore, but if you go on archive.org on the Wayback Machine, you can probably see some provisional stuff. It was myself. This other guy paid for the domain, actually, because I wasn't brave enough to steal my mum's credit card. So he paid for it. And someone else did all the artwork and stuff. And I just did the coding and I was an administrator. I had all the power. Yeah. It was pretty cool. I felt like a king.
I just found a Reddit, the Alkaline Trio Reddit. There's a mix of old Blood Pact folks and other message boards posters on here, e.g. alkalinetrio.org, All Hope Deleted, the Alkaline Trio UK page. Is that a reference? is the All Hope Deleted you?
Yes. Nice.
All right, so I'm hoping some people...
Hold on, what if I put this on Reddit? It comes full circle.
No, oh yeah, one of my publicity things is I usually try and find a subreddit.
I don't think I'm brave enough to do it because I feel like all the information that I have presented will get me killed. All these people, never mind Storm Area 51, they'll be like, storm George Gadd's house and just bomb it. That guy says that he doesn't like this song. I hate him.
Oh man, I really wish you could have. I really wish you'd have come up straight here saying like.
I probably should have brought that up.
Yeah.
I told you that beforehand.
No, it's fine. Which it also means now that on my tablet I've got, I need to find me notes again. Yeah.
Oh man, I definitely didn't get bullied at school.
Yeah, I've seen them once, but that was part of a festival set because they headlined 2000 Trees in 2000 and I want to say 15.
But I heard that didn't go down very well.
It didn't. Because I think, I know one of the guys that we camped with was like massively hyped, absolutely static, like kind of shaking, going, I'm playing trees. And to be fair, I mean, it is a very big get for them.
Mm.
In other years, they then went and got like Refused to headline and
at the drive-in.
Yeah.
That was good.
So I think Alkaline Trio was probably the biggest get that they got.
See, I think they could still headline Trees. Like, if they did Trees next year, I'd be like, dope, ticket bought. But I think I'm a bit cynical in saying this. The Blink-182 thing has probably generated more fans for them.
Yeah.
Hilariously, I read an article when they did Is This Thing Cursed? Like, someone was like, Matt Skiba's first album as Alkaline Trio since Blink-182. I'm like, fuck you. How dare you skip 20 years of incredible music.
Yeah, with the 2000 Trees set, I think the power went about like 15 minutes in.
They did it acoustic, didn't they?
Yeah, I think Dan tried to start singing stuff and we was quite in the middle of the arena, because you know the arena size, it was before they changed it a couple years ago, so like no one could hear it, so you got people at the front singing along, but then you got like the people who can't appreciate what they're trying to do and going, we can't hear you, and I'm like, give them a break. I mean, like,
see, like,
if people, this is like the first time sitting down and listening to a Alkaline Trio and they go through God damn it, I'd be quite surprised if it is their first one, if there is the first one. But if anyone listens to this and then wants to listen to more Alkaline Trio, where do you suggest they go?
From this album. So if they listen to this album, I'd probably say From Here to Infirmary, Good Morning, then Crimson, and then just everything else, I guess. If it was me, I'd probably just say listen to Crimson, because that album slaps and I love that album. But I think the past few records they've done, you know, they also have good songs on them as well. Like, Is This Thing Cursed? The title track is incredible. Demon in Division's really good. Stay, I want to say Crystalline closes that, which is really good. Oh, there's a song about Fyre Festival on there as well.
Oh, cool.
What's it fucking called? Goodbye Fyre Island. And it's like, it's just Matt Skiba ripping on like rich white kids, and it's like, this is the Alkaline Trio I fell in love with.
Awesome. I've got to listen to that.
Yeah.
I saw that documentary. Yeah. It blew my mind.
I just like the idea of like when he came back and like everyone's like, what went wrong? And he's like, I put a curse on it. And they're like, oh my God, Matt Skiba from Blink-182 put a curse on Fyre Festival. And what's Ja Rule doing? Oh my God.
The most important part of the podcast now is the nomination for the Playlist Hall of Fame, where you nominate one song from this album to join the pantheon of previous pantheon of previous songs that have been picked. So, for example, you'll join the such classics as The Church Channel by Say Anything, Phoebe Bridgers, Motion Sickness.
Both of those are like really good songs.
Me and My Imagination by Sophie Alice Baxter. And stuff like Nirvana and Bruce Springsteen and so.
Yeah, just casual bit of Bruce.
Yeah.
Church Channel though. Ooh. That's the one with Hayley Williams on. Sold.
So yeah.
Sold.
Yeah. So
Matt Skiba's on that album as well. He's on About Falling.
What, the
Say Anything record?
I'm pretty sure anyone who had anything to do with pop punk in 2007
was on that album.
Was on that album. Yeah, it is. I remember like likening it to pretty much like a rap album.
Yeah,
where like we have guest people come in.
Yeah.
So the song from this album that you wanted to pick.
You know what? You mentioned it like before, and 5 minutes ago, and don't know. I'm going to go with, I want to say, I should have thought about this. Spur of the moment, I'm going to say San Francisco. But it was between that message from Kathleen, trouble breathing, and sorry about that, and cringe, and...
But it was between that and the other 11 songs.
Yeah, it was between that and like 9 others, because there are some that, yeah.
It's quite, what's quite interesting is that people say like, the guests that have been on here previously have either come in saying, oh yeah, it's going to be this one and this one.
Yeah.
But then they've changed their mind as we've talked to the album and go, and sometimes says, well, I was going to pick so-and-so, but then as we've been talking about it, I'm going to go with so-and-so. But then some that like go, pretty much yourself, like realise, just pick at the spur of the moment.
Yeah.
And then some who are like dead set.
I've come in with this one.
Yeah.
I mean, with that Phoebe Bridgers record, I'd probably pick Motion Sickness and Church Channel. Those are the two, well, Say Anything, Church Channel.
Mm.
Or Plea.
Yeah.
Or About Falling. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean,
like, there are like 20 odd songs to pick from on that. one.
Yeah. So San Francisco joins the prestigious club. Yeah. And I think that's it. That's all we have.
Thank you for having me.
Then we just reached the end. And I just want to say thank you ever so much for, as I said before, making the journey down.
It's been lovely.
Yeah, and being the, air quotes, first person to be here. Which technically,
chronologically.
Yeah, chronologically the first person.
Yeah.
So, which
is... But in episodic order, not so much.
Yes, but the guinea pig. The guinea pig to the acoustics of this room.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. And actually, I think we've gone on there without actually referencing the fact that your partner, Sarah, has also been here.
Completely silent for how long?
About an hour and 11 minutes.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. So for reference, she's only heard the album 1.5 times and I skipped a few songs. And also she's been going back to the kitchen for more wine. Sorry, I didn't mean to out you like that, but I've only had one can. It's like envy. Envy, sorry.
Well, technically, I'm classing this as my first live show,
We've got an audience of one.
Yeah. Pick a disc live.
Do you have anything to say to the good people at home?
It's been a pleasure.
Do you feel like you've learnt an awful lot about a really niche topic?
Sort of. I zoned in out a little bit.
Yeah. Oh,
I'll be honest.
Yeah, that's fair.
Was it during the tangents?
No, I thought the tangents were fantastic.
Pick back up on the tangents.
Yes, yeah. Picked it back up.
Oh, they're talking about Alkaline Trio again. Oh, my goodness. Oh, they're talking about Blink-182. I like them. Yeah. That Skiba fellow, he does a bang-up job.
That office guy.
Office. If you don't have a microphone, you don't get a say. Next time. You should come on and do your own.
Well, say thank you both anyway. Thank you both for going on. So, if people want to find you and your music endeavours, where can they find you?
The best thing to do is probably just to Google George Gadd, GADD, and ignore the University of Nottingham thing that comes up because that's work related. Yeah, or Spotify and Bandcamp are like the best places. If you want to chat, I'm always up for a chat. Sorry.
Particularly if it's on an Alkaline Trio forum.
Yeah. Or Reddit discussion.
Yeah. You've got a headline show in Nottingham in December as well.
I have, December the 7th at the Bodega. It's with a band called Harker, who sound a lot like Alkaline Trio. They're kind of like a mix between Alkaline Trio, Get Up Kids, and Hot Water Music. And they're all bloody wonderful people.
I've got a really strong theory. I should have invited more people you know, and this turned into an intervention.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see you might have an addiction to Alkaline Trio, I think.
This addiction, the 7th album by Alkaline Trio.
I'm just an enabler, aren't I?
You're enabling this.
But no, definitely check out Georgie's stuff. He's... some really good songs on there.
Thank you.
And again, thank you ever so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
You've been listening to Pick a Disc and I've been your host, Matthew Layla. Our theme music is Pump by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com. Pick a Disc is hosted by the We Made This podcast network, and you can find them on www.spreaker.com/user/WeMadeThis. You can find the Pick a Disc show site on www.spreaker.com/show/pickadisc. You can find us on all the usual social media type places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter under Pick a Disc. You can also email us on pickadisc@gmail.com. Until next time, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.